Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Roster Rhetorical, the official MLB Daily Dish podcast. This is episode number 23. As always, I am your host, Chris Schubert. Alongside me this week, I just have one of my two co-hosts, Matt the Bull Goldman. Matt, I think this is a repeat of a other nickname.
Oh, did I do the Bull already?
I think Matt Bull Goldman has, you did already. Yeah, I think you've repeated yourself.
Oh, man. I was struggling to come up with one, so that's what I went with. I apologize.
Well, you should play up your Twitter handle.
That's true. It's from my my high school nickname, and on my baseball team was the Bull, and that's all I could come up with before I logged in.
Normally, you have something witty, but this week I was like, I'm a little disappointed. You were tweeting about something earlier today. You were listening to some album or something.
Yeah, I was listening to an album that came out 2 years ago now, I think, from a guy named Absol, because I remembered it being not good, and it was better than I remembered, but it still was not great.
So I thought that was where your reference was going to be from tonight. I wasn't going to understand, but
I'll come back with a better one next week.
All right, that's good.
I'll do some research.
Our other co-host, Mike Bates, is not with us tonight. He is actually in the same state that I am. He's down here for spring training. We talked about that on last week's show, but he couldn't make it tonight. I'm supposed to meet up with him at some point during his stay here, and we'll get together, and me and him will do a live show together. So that should be fun. Before we get started, only a couple stories tonight. A lot of injury news that we want to get to, some trade rumors, and Matt and I both decided that we want to talk about a player that we're excited for to watch this year. Could be, you know, a no-name guy or somebody that, you know, teams are looking forward to seeing this year. So we'll get to that as the show goes on. But before we start, just want to remind everyone to subscribe to the show on iTunes. And while you're there, to leave a comment. I know I mention this every week, but subscribing is huge. You don't have to do any legwork on your end after you hit subscribe. The episodes will get automatically dropped right into your little iTunes podcast section. And if you have an iPhone, they will automatically download right there for you. So perfect way to have the show whenever you want it, and get it in case something happens where we have to change the days we record or something like that. So, all right, Matt, are you ready? We got some news to get to. You just typed it. We forgot something, so we'll get to that towards the end of the show. So let's start with Jarrett Parker, because this is a story that I had been following a little bit all week. This is the same story from the pitcher that left the mound screaming this week, right, Matt? I'm not.
Yeah, that's that is the man in question.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I knew it was an AIDS pitcher, but all right. So Jarrett Parker, it is official that he has refractured his help me with this, Matt.
I believe, I will check just so
we're not idiots,
but I believe it was his remedial.
No, it's his medial.
It's his medial. Okay.
I think remedial is like an English term.
Hold on. I'm pulling it up now. But yeah,
we'll find out what remedial is so we can.
Right. So we have all our bases covered. Yeah. But yeah, he fractured the same bone that he did, that he broke in 2015 when he was on the mend from Tommy John surgery. He fractured his medial epicondyle bone in his right elbow, which I believe Eno Saris tweeted that it's the bone that they screw the new tendon in when you get Tommy John surgery. So a part of me was wondering if maybe there was a complication in the surgery that we're now just learning about, which, you know, maybe they screwed it in too tight. I don't know. I'm obviously not a Tommy John expert, but it is at least somewhat curious that the bone that he's fractured, you know, and we've never really seen a guy just fracture his elbow, you know, twice like this. So it just seems kind of fishy that the bone that he happened to break twice now just by throwing a pitch was the bone that they would screw his new tendon in for his, you know, Tommy John surgery.
And this is a huge blow to the A's. Parker, since the first Tommy John surgery, has only appeared in four minor league games since the end of 2013. They were slotting him in to be part of the bullpen, you know, as he continues his rehab. And, you know, this is one of those things where, you know, Tommy John is not always successful. And we see a lot of cases where it is. You know, Matt Harvey had it. Adam Wainwright had it. Jacob DeGrom had it. A lot of guys have it, and it works, and they come back. And, you know, they're as good as they were. Sometimes they're even better in certain cases. But this is one of those cases where maybe something happened and it's not, it didn't take or something. And now Parker, the road to recovery, you know, takes a step backwards and it could be a longer road now. This probably puts him out at least another year, if not more. So, you know, if you play this out, he probably wouldn't be able to throw until middle of next season. So he may be able to pitch toward the end of next year, if everything goes well, which obviously, you know, it hasn't for him so far. So that'll be interesting. But now the A's, a team that, you know, wasn't really on paper, you know, the greatest team in the world, lost one of their key pieces in their bullpen for this season. So not a good thing for either side, Parker and the A's. And this is a guy that, you know, was drafted 9th overall by the Diamondbacks and was part of a key deal for Trevor Cahill way back when. So this is a guy that had a high stock around him, and, you know, it just never really materialized for him. So, so he has a longer road to recovery, and we wish him the best, obviously, because hate to see things like this. Not good for the game for stories like this.
Yeah, and, you know, I think there's a real serious chance that this could be the end of his career. You know, Sarah's mentioned that no one's ever come back from this injury, in part because it's rare and because of the seriousness of it. And now this is his second go around in less than a year with breaking his elbow. So I believe the A's are talking to him about his future, obviously, with medical input. So I hope this is not the last of Jared Parker, because when he was healthy, he was really exciting to watch, and he gave or it looked like he was going to give the A's a real 1-2 punch with Sonny Gray. I guess now that'll be someone else's job, maybe Sean Manaea when he comes up soon. But it's just obviously heartbreaking to see a guy work so hard to get back just to succumb to the exact same injury.
One added note, Parker enters his last year of arbitration in 2017 and becomes a free agent. So there's that that has to play into the mix. Did you find out what remedial means, by the way?
Yeah, it actually means a remedy or a cure. So that was the exact opposite word.
Opposite of what we were trying to do. All right, good. So we kind of made ourselves look like fools to start the show.
It's fine though. Awesome. We corrected it.
We did. We corrected
it. Fools don't look stuff up to correct themselves. They just keep going.
Right. We fact check ourselves, albeit sometimes we don't fact check everything, but we try. So from one AL West pitcher to another, Matt. I think you wrote this article, but I saw the tweet that you retweeted, that, you know, kind of spurred all this on. And that was a tweet from Pedro Morea. And this game was from, when was it this week? I think it was either Tuesday or Wednesday or.
That sounds about right. Yeah. When I wrote the article,
before
we really knew that there was anything medically wrong with Weaver. He had made a spring training start. I believe it was a second, and a scout had him between 78 to 81, I think was the range where he topped out, and he served up a homer to, I can't remember exactly who, but it was Austin Barnes hit a homer on a 78 mile per hour fastball. And, you know, this game is more about throwing 98 miles an hour. You know, we've seen guys succeed with high 80s, low 80s, but throwing 78 mile per hour fastballs is not going to cut it at the major league level. You know, high school sophomores are throwing harder than that. So at first it seemed like maybe he had a shoulder problem. You know, the way that his crossfire delivery goes, you always wondered how long that was going to last. But now, like you said, there was a tweet from, I believe it was D. Giovanni. I apologize if you're listening. But he was diagnosed, or not, Weaver was diagnosed with mild degenerative changes in his cervical spine. And that would obviously lead to some discomfort while you're pitching. And, you know, physical changes are not good for anyone, especially a pitcher. Or at least, you know, something with your spine. Obviously, if you're putting on muscle, that's not a horrible thing to do. But this would definitely seem to explain why Weaver has lost so much velocity so quickly. You know, he never was a fireballer, but he was averaging 90 miles per hour on his fastball, I believe, just four, maybe five seasons ago. And then that dropped off to 88.3 for a couple years, which was not great, but it wasn't terribly worrying because it seemed to stabilize. And then the year after that, which was last year, dropped all the way to 84.9 miles per hour, if I'm remembering correctly. And that was when people started to get really worried because, you know, you lose almost 3 miles per hour on your fastball over the course of one season. That's going to freak people out, and rightfully so. And he had the worst year of his career. And now in spring training, he can't even top 85. Obviously, there's still a few weeks left for him to put on some velocity if he can. But with the news about his spine, it's kind of the same thing as Parker. You wonder how long he's got left.
Well, and when I heard that he had, you know, this spinal sort of injury, it reminded me of, I don't know, I talk about them a lot because they're my team, but reminded me of what happened with David Wright. And when you're a player and you're used to doing something a certain way and an injury forces you to change the way you play the game, it can be hard to do when you've had a long career. And, you know, Jared Weaver's had a long career. David Wright had a long career. And both of these guys, now one's a pitcher, one's a hitter, but both of these guys now are going to have to change the way that they play the game in order to be able to, you know, keep their careers going and be successful at what they do and continue on and try to be the player that they were before the injury. So, you know, that was the first thing that came to mind for me is now Jared Weaver is going to have to change probably a little bit the way he pitches. And with a guy that already has a rather, I don't want to call it odd, but a different delivery, it's going to be interesting to see what he does differently in order to potentially combat this injury. I know for David, he had to change the way he held the bat, the way he swung, change the way he worked out pregame, what kind of swings he took in the cage. I mean, everything around his game had to change. And if that's what has to go in for a hitter to make these changes, I couldn't even begin to imagine what a pitcher is going to have to do at Weaver's age in order to fix and sort of change the way he does things to combat this injury. Anything, Matt?
Sorry, I didn't know you were looking for a response there.
I was just throwing it out there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like you said, changing your – anybody at the major league level changing anything is difficult. I mean, I don't know what the average age of a guy making his debut is anymore, but you know, most of these guys have been playing baseball since they were three in a T-ball league, and through little league, high school and college, they've perfected or gotten close to getting their mechanics on point and making a repeatable delivery or a repeatable swing. You know, baseball is all about mechanics. And to ask a guy who's 33, which isn't, you know, insanely old, obviously, but to ask a guy who's 33 to suddenly change his delivery, change the way he throws, maybe the way he warms up is, it's not that it's impossible to do, but it's a lot to ask. And it's hard to imagine it working out exactly the way you want. Obviously, Wright was able to come back. And he was the guy that people remembered. He was hitting well. I think he had a homer in his first at bat, or at least his game
against the Phillies.
Yeah. But you know, like you said, Weaver's got a unique delivery. He's not the only guy that has a crossfire delivery, but it's seemingly the most pronounced crossover delivery. Obviously that could be wrong. Just bias in seeing him over the years, but
Cueto's is a little,
yeah. Cueto's got kind of a herky jerky motion.
Yeah.
But, you know, with Weaver, you know, he was already, you just wonder how long this has been a problem because he started losing velocity 3-4 years ago.
Sure.
And, you know, just in the last 2 years, we've seen, obviously it's only one example, but Hunter Pence has a similar issue with his spine, and nobody noticed it until he signed an extension with the Giants after the 2011 season, I believe.
That you're the Giants.
I think maybe it was after 2013. I can't exactly remember, but you know, I can't imagine how many physicals he'd taken, how many medical diagnostic tests that he's had to go through in his baseball career, just, you know, through signing contracts, getting drafted, making sure that he's ready to go. And no one noticed this for, you know, over 30 years, maybe. I can't remember exactly how old he is, but it's not completely out of the ordinary. So you wonder if Weaver's been struggling with this and he's now just come to the point where they were trying to think outside the box and go for and think of problems that could be affecting him that might not show up on a normal physical.
All right, so let me take this a step further. I've pulled up the Angels depth charts, and now this was last verified today. And according to this, Jared Weaver has neck stiffness. Just want everyone to know that that's what it is officially listed as on the Angels depth charts. Now, when you look further, because you assume that Weaver's going to probably miss a little time as he tries to figure all this out, you look at what's left for the Angels rotation, and it's not pretty, I'll be honest. CJ Wilson is questionable for opening day with a shoulder, with his left shoulder injury. You have Tyler Skaggs, who's going to be questionable for opening day, coming back from Tommy John. So here's what's left in terms of healthy available guys. Garrett Richards, Andrew Heaney, Matt Shoemaker, Henter Santiago, and Nick Tropiano.
Yeah, it's not pretty.
That doesn't instill confidence with a team that, when you look at what they are putting on the field in terms of offense, isn't, you know, world beater. And their pitching has taken a hit. They have three guys currently on the disabled list. So doesn't instill a ton of confidence for Angels fans for what the Angels may be able to do in 2016.
Yeah, the Angels had so many things that it looked like they needed to accomplish in the offseason. And Billy Epler really didn't do any of them. I know he technically did, but, you know, slotting Daniel Nava as the opening day starter in left field is really a questionable at best move. Andrelton Simmons, while he's a defensive wizard, he has never shown an ability to hit. Obviously, he makes up for that with how great he is defensively, and he still provides a tremendous amount of value. But offensively, he's really not going to help you. Second base is inhabited by Johnny Giovitella, Cliff Pennington, and I don't believe he'll make the 25-man roster when it's all said and done. But Ray Navarro is the third listed on the depth chart.
Yunel Escobar?
Sorry, what?
I was just going to say, they went out and traded for Yunel Escobar.
Right, he's at third. I think he'll be fine. You know, we've seen what he's done over the past 2 years. He's a better-than-average hitter. And then at first base, Pujols might not even be ready for opening day, which would put CJ Cron at first full-time. And then they don't really have a DH because Cron is listed as the opening day DH with Nava as backup.
So you put Nava. So you put Nava. So if you play this out, right, you put Pujols on the disabled list, you move Cron to first base, Nava's the DH, Craig Gentry is the starting day left fielder for the Angels.
Yeah. Because I know we've talked about this before, and I believe Bates wrote an article about how you just couldn't get a fair package for Mike Trout to make it worth it. And I don't think it would make sense to trade Trout this year, but they don't have a good farm system. They traded away a lot of guys, especially pitching. They just gave up their top prospect to Atlanta in the deal for Andrelton Simmons. Mm-hmm. But I mean, teams would give up their whole farm for Mike Trout. I always focus in on the Cubs just because they've got, I mean, even Bryant graduated, Schwarber graduated, Russell's at the big league level. Soler, while he's a utility guy, is still there. Javier Baez doesn't really seem to have a shot at major playing time since Ben Zobrist is the fully evolved version of Javier Baez, just with less power. But they've still got so many guys in the minor leagues that I have a hard time believing that if Epler called up Theo and said, make me an offer for Mike Trout, that they couldn't work something out. Obviously, that's me playing fantasy GM and OOTP baseball right there. But
I was just going to say, the new one comes out soon.
Yeah, right. And I have a free version.
Comes out, what, 5 days? The 18th, I think? Or maybe that was I read something today that the 18th some version came
out. Oh, you saw a tweet from me that Daredevil is coming out on Netflix.
No, I thought I saw something about – I saw
– Oh, you know what? I think OOTP, the beta version, is coming out.
Ah.
And I think the release date is sometime in late March. I want to say past the 20th. Also, if you're listening and you don't know what OOTP is, go download it. There's the 16 version, or you can just wait for the new version. But it's a much more in-depth version of fantasy baseball, and it's really fun. Yeah, it will consume your life.
The way I would describe it is if MLB The Show's GM mode leaves you unsatisfied, everything you could want in the GM mode is in OOTP. So I play it. Matt plays it. Matt, when the new version comes out, we'll have to have you come on the show and promote it.
Just, oh, yeah. I can definitely. I'm very excited because the 2016 version, rightfully so, wasn't very high on Joe Panic or Crawford or Belt or I guess Belt was a little confusing, but Matt Duffy was not rated highly at all. So hopefully the 2017 version will be more fun for Giants fans.
Yeah, it wasn't good on Syndergaard or any of those guys either.
Yeah, Syndergaard, he looked better when you switched from Stars to a 20 to 80 scouting profile. But
now we're getting into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, maybe that's a different. We can have an OOTP themed episode later. Sure.
That's what that sounded like. The Angels are, you know, they needed to make moves. They didn't. And now this is kind of what happens when the injuries pile up. And, you know, I think both of us mentioned it on the show that on paper, the Angels, you know, weren't a great team. And now you're really seeing the flaws in their roster come out now. So I wonder if they make a move.
They have to.
I know you're not going to like this, but I'm just going to throw it out there because I thought about it.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
If we're going to go with one guy with a herky-jerky motion, why don't they just sign Tim Lincecum?
Yeah.
In all honesty, that would be a fit there.
I think positionally and for need-wise, it makes sense, but I'm going to automatically hate.
Because you're a Giants fan.
I'm going to hate whatever team signs him just because it's going to make me incredibly sad to see him in another uniform. Obviously, if the Giants sign him, I'm not going to hate the Giants. But it's hard to see them having a fit.
I think there was a tweet this week where you were like, Lincecum should go here. And you quote tweeted. It was like, no. That was it. That was your tweet. You're just like, no.
Yeah, I can't remember what team it was. But no, he shouldn't go anywhere outside of San Francisco. Even if he's not good anymore, I want him to be not good for the Giants.
You don't want him to be not good for like the Dodgers?
No, if he signs with the Dodgers, I might just explode and die.
If he signed with the Dodgers, your head might explode on show.
It was bad enough when Brian Wilson went to the Dodgers, but Lincecum was the first college pitcher I ever followed just because he was exciting to watch. And then he happened to get drafted by the Giants, and I was at his first major league start where he was hitting 100 against the Phillies in 07. And so to see how amazing he was for as long as he was, even though it was kind of a 4 or 5 year stretch. He's one of my all time favorite players, no matter what. And I don't want to see him pitch for another team.
All that aside, I still think the Angels are a perfect fit for him now that I've put all this together, and I have nothing to back this up. I was just thinking about it. And because Matt's a big Lincecum fan, so thought I'd wind him up a little bit. So this is a perfect segue. A former Angel just signed with the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Huh? Yep, David Freese.
How good was that? That was a good one.
The most confusing thing to me is why David Freese was still a free agent, because for the entire offseason, I was under the false impression that he had received a qualifying offer, which was why no teams wanted him.
I remember I think it was either in the MLB Daily Dish offices or the show where someone was like, Freese didn't get a qualifying offer. And you were like, what?
Yeah, I typed it out in the and Cotillo corrected me in our Slack chat, and I was flabbergasted. I mean, this is a guy, he only played in 121 games this year, but he hit 14 homers. He drove 261? In 56. He had a WRC plus of 110, which means he was 10% better than a league average hitter, and he posted an F4 of 2.2. So I just couldn't figure out why there wasn't some team that would, you know, David Freese was not going to break the bank. Honestly, I thought the Angels should go get him. And have Yunel Escobar switch over to second base, let David Freese stay at third. And
I would fix one of their problems.
Yeah, Hesto Presto, either one of them is way better than Johnny Giovitella or Cliff Pennington. Hesto
Presto.
And it's going to be, what, he signed for $5 million maybe?
Yeah, I don't remember what the exact dollar amount was, but it wasn't a lot.
Yeah, so to see him have to wait until after spring training actually started was just... Once I realized that he didn't have a qualifying offer, it blew my mind. So
doesn't this scream like a typical Pittsburgh Pirate move?
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're known for grabbing like reclamation projects in terms of pitchers and like reworking them and making them great. Like J.A. Happ's the perfect example of that. They traded for John Neese, who I think is going to reinvent himself in Pittsburgh. But this just screams like a move that the Pirates make, and Freese is going to have an amazing year this year and is going to get paid next year.
Yeah, I guess, he should, I assume he'll slot in as the everyday third baseman, and that Jung Ho Kong will bump Jody Mercer out of short.
Right. Well, what are they going to do with Josh Harrelson?
Well, he's the full-time second baseman.
Okay. That'll work then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me look up the Pirates depth chart while we're talking.
Yeah. Cause they've got Starling Marte in left, McCutchen in center, and Polanco in right. So then their infield could be from left to right, Freese, Kong, Harrison, and Jaso or Michael Morse. Since we're talking about the Pirates, their rotation is kind of not encouraging.
No.
They've got Liriano and Cole. If Nice is not as good as he was last year, they've done 60% of their rotation. Nice, Jeff Locke.
I think Jeff Locke.
And Vogelsong, who, Vogelsong is another guy that will always be a lifetime favorite for me, but he's not what he was in 2011 or 2012. He might get you 180 innings if he's healthy, but that's
maybe
not,
that's where we put Tim Lincecum.
Yeah, he could go there. I might be okay with that. But for a team that's offensively really solid and their catching situation is truly enviable. Cervelli showed he can hit last year, and both he and Stewart are great pitch framers and just call a great game. Their rotation just really worries me.
Bullpen isn't great either. Besides Melanson and Tony Watson, you look down the rest of the list and they have Neftali Feliz and Juan Nicasio in there. Kyle Lobestein is, not great. So the pitching side of things could be where the Pirates struggle this year, and they're not going to do themselves any favors with the division that they play in.
No,
because Cardinals and Cubs are going to be really good.
Yeah, the Cardinals have great pitching, even with the loss of Lynn.
Yeah, even with the loss of Lynn, they're still in a position to succeed. So it's another team where you look at it on paper and you're like, and it could all fall apart really quickly. But typical Pirate move, and I actually like it because I think David Freese is going to have a solid year. Defensively, they should be fine too. Jaso was solid at first. Harrison can handle himself at second. Kong, last year was one of the best shortstops, I think, in the National League. I think that's fair, right? When he finally got the gig.
Yeah, once he finally, got his true stride, he was great. I mean,
he was a
Rookie of the Year contender. Obviously, Bryant was going to win it no matter what once he took off, but he was just as good as, he might have even been better than Duffy. He could have played second if he hadn't broken his leg.
The problem with Kong is his return is only targeted for April, so they may not want to rush him. So Freeze may start at third.
With Mercer at short.
And Mercer's going to play short, and then when Kong returns, Mercer's going to just go to the bench, I think. I don't think they want to rush Kong. And Sean Rodriguez is capable enough to be the backup to Mercer. Obviously, he doesn't bring the power that Kong brought and just the ability to hit. But, they have options, at least offensively, to ride this out. So that was good for forgetting about David Freese signing. We forgot about it when we did the pre-show.
Yeah, I realized the second that you started the intro. I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, mid-intro, you typed, just remember David Freese. We should probably talk about that.
Yeah, might have been.
So we're going to stay in the division. We're going to go to the National League Central. Still, right? Yeah, NL Central. Why did I do that to myself? And this is interesting, but it has to do with what we talked about on last week's show. And that is that the Cardinals are interested in trading for a shortstop. And Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, but the only name that I've seen thrown out there that they're interested in is my team's shortstop or backup shortstop, Ruben Tejada.
Yep. I believe that was the latest rumor and the reason that I actually mentioned it. Obviously Ian Desmond comes to mind, but it's hard to imagine the Rangers giving up on him already. But maybe they wait a week or two and see how Aledmius Diaz is doing. I think he's kind of who they're hoping will step up and take over. But
sure.
Losing Peralta is tough. He wasn't an amazing defensive wizard, but he hit the ball pretty well for a shortstop, which is generally a tough position to get any offense out of.
So if we take this rumor at face value, and I'm going to pair it with another rumor that I saw today, the Mets are looking to acquire a backup catcher, and that is mainly because they want Kevin Plawecki, who is their top catching prospect, not counting Travis d'Arnaud, Kevin Plawecki, they want him to get at bats on a regular basis because they still think he needs to grow. I mean, he's only 22. So they want him. I think they'd prefer him to get at bats in AAA with Las Vegas. And backing up to Travis d'Arnaud, while d'Arnaud has, you know, injury, I don't want to say tendencies because they're really freak injuries. It's not like he's injury prone. But, you know, he's not going to get that many at bats. So the rumor came out today that they're looking for a backup catcher. And I look at the Cardinals and they have Brian Peña, who they signed from the Reds as their backup catcher. And a Tejada for Peña swap is probably fair. Need for need, not a ton of money involved, should work. Everyone's happy. So that is a potential starting point if the Cardinals do decide, hey, let's call up the Mets and ask about Ruben Tejada.
Yeah.
Now, the Mets aren't also in the business of trading a shortstop right now because they don't know what's going on with this Jubal Cabrera. Cabrera may not be ready for opening day. I think he hurt his right knee, his left knee?
Yeah, I think so. His right knee.
His right knee. And he's not sure he's going to be ready for opening day, which means Wilmer Flores, Flushing hero, would slot in at shortstop to start the year, and Tejada would be his backup. So until that gets sorted out, I don't think Ruben Tejada is going anywhere, which is surprising because if you asked me if Ruben Tejada was going to make the team when spring training started, I would have told you you were insane.
Right. You know, you say the Cardinals. I immediately thought of the Royals, who have Salvador Perez. Their depth chart says Drew Butera. I believe he's still there. And then also Tony Cruz, who was the former Cardinal catcher or former Cardinal backup. So I think they might make more sense. They've got three. Peña, while he's not expensive, is signed to a 2-year deal. So he's got some money committed, and Butera or Cruz really aren't bringing home the bacon. So I think that might make more sense. And then also, worst case scenarios, you see the Royals in the World Series again. And
Ruben Tejada breaks your heart.
Right. But also, you know, the Royals don't need a shortstop. They've got Escobar. So you might not even need to get rid of a shortstop to make that trade happen. Teams obviously love having depth at every position, but I could see the Royals being willing to part with Cruz for, you know, a mid-level prospect, maybe a bullpen guy just to
Rafael Montero.
There you go. Call up Dayton Moore tomorrow. Deal. Get it done.
OTP. Rafael Montero for Tony Cruz. It's done. Probably not. The OTP GM is a little smarter than that. They probably wouldn't let me get away with that. Since we did it for the other two teams, I'm looking at the Cardinals on paper, and I know I said that I think they're going to win a lot, but now that I look at it, I'm doubting myself. Because let's look at it, and Matt, stop me if you disagree with any of these statements. You don't know what you're going to get from Matt Holliday. You're going with two young guys in Steven Piscotty and Randall Grichuk in the outfield. You signed Colton Wong to a 5-year extension, but, you know, he's still young. You worry about him maybe hitting a plateau for a little while. The first base situation is a disaster because Brandon Moss nor Matt Adams, you know, instills a ton of confidence. Matt Carpenter's really the only consistent offensive player that they have. I mean, I guess you count Yadier Molina, but, you know, he's hurt. He's kind of been banged up the last couple of years. You know, and we said before that their rotation is solid. Adam Wainwright, Jaime Garcia, Michael Wacha, you know, the newly signed Mike Leake, and Carlos Martinez. That's a really good starting five, and they can get away with it. But offensively, they don't really wow you.
Yeah, I mean, I would disagree with that statement. I'm a big believer in Grichuk. I'm not sold on Piscotty. Wong has never really developed into that offensive force that at least it seemed like he was going to become based off the hype when he came up to the big leagues for the first time. I like Matt Adams. He had a rough year last year with injuries, and, you know, the previous 2 years he was pretty good. He had a 135 WRC plus in 2013, and in 2014 it decreased, but it was still 116. So he was a 16% better than league average hitter. His F4 has never been spectacular, but that's really a hit on because of his defense. He's not adequate. He's destined to be a DH at one point if he can still hit it. But, you know, like the projections have hated the Royals over the last 2 years. And now you kind of, I don't know if I want to say I'm questioning the projections, but there's obviously something there that just can't be accounted for. And so I'm not going to bet against the Dayton Moore devil magic until it fails. And the Cardinals have shown over and over and over again that whenever they lose a guy to injury or, you know, Jason Hayward or somebody else signs with another team, some random guy steps up from their system that they've developed and just proves to be a stud. So until that stops and the Cardinals hit their lull, which has not happened in a really long time, I'm just not going to bet against them. They've proven me wrong too many times.
That's a really good point. Some random no-name comes up and lights the world on fire. And, you know, you just chalk it up to the Cardinals are really good drafters. I mean, that's the line everyone uses. The Cardinals are really good at scouting. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, my original statement was I think they're going to win a lot of games, and I doubted myself, but I think I should just go with what my gut told me. All right, let's close the show with a little bit of a fun discussion here, or just a little last-minute thing. Matt mentioned before the show that he wanted to kind of throw out some names of some guys or a player that we're excited to see this year that may not be known to everybody. I think my guy is going to be known to most of the people that will be listening to this show, but I'm not sure. So that's why I'm going to bring him up. Matt, do you want to go first?
I can do that. So my guys
you have two, right?
I just lost one of them because I typed in Matt Adams in his text box. But my first guy is a reliever named Michael Givens, M-Y-C-H-A-L. That's how you spell the first name if you're going to look him up on Baseball Reference or Fangraphs yourself.
Fangraphs.
Yeah, he got 30 innings last year. He had an 11.4 K per nine, only walked 1.8 per nine innings, didn't really allow many homers, a rate of 0.3 per nine innings. And his ERA and FIP were nearly in perfect alignment at 1.80 and 1.73. And the year before in the minor leagues in 57 innings, they agreed 100% as they were both at 1.73. So I'm not expecting any huge regression from him. And he has an average fastball velocity of 94. His cutter comes in at 92 most of the time, got an 84 mile per hour slider. So this is just one of those Uber relievers that is coming up that seems to be changing the way baseball works. So I'm not super excited about the Orioles, but I'm excited about Givens to see what he can do. And, you know, maybe he becomes a trade chip over the next year or two when or if the Orioles don't perform the way they're expecting to, and they kind of need to not necessarily blow up the team, but if they need to get some prospects back. We've seen that relievers are in high demand these days. Kimbrel brought back four players for the Padres, and Giles brought back five for Philadelphia, three of whom are all potential legitimate MLB starters. So relievers aren't these random guys that you see picked up on the waiver wire anymore. Obviously, that still happens, but we're in a different era with relievers.
Do you want to do your second one, or you want me to do mine?
I can go two for two if that's what you're thinking.
I like your second one only because I think part of it is the team in question that we're talking about needs something good to happen to them.
Yeah.
And if this player pans out, then it will be a huge success for them this year. So I hope I didn't give too much away.
Go ahead. No, I'm pretty sure no one will have guessed my guy based off that. But he was a guy coming into spring training that didn't look like, or at least at the end of 2015, rather, it didn't look like there was a spot for him to play every day. And I'm talking about Trevor Story of the Rockies. Obviously, they had traded Troy Tulowitzki away, so there was somewhat of an opening, but they still had Jose Reyes, who's set to make an enormous amount of money. And despite the old adage that you got to play who's better, it's hard for major league teams to do that when you're paying a guy as much as they're paying Jose Reyes, which is, I believe, close to $20 million, if not $20 million. But now that he's run into these domestic violence issues and he's not even in spring training, he's awaiting trial, which I believe you mentioned is on opening day, which is
opening day.
A cruel but funny joke, it seems. He might not play at all in 2016. He's obviously got to deal with the legal ramifications, and now he's got to deal with the precedent that Aroldis Chapman set, which was 30-game suspension for no charges, no arrest. And Jose Reyes has both of those. And he still has to worry about getting charged, but the judge ruling guilty. Not in his favor, obviously. So there could be some other repercussions that he has to deal with before baseball is even in the question. And Trevor Story, while he's not, he's not as flashy of a name as, say, Brendan Rodgers is, just because he was a higher pick. Not to say that Trevor Story wasn't. He was picked 12th in the first round. You know, Rodgers is the sexy name right now for the Rockies, but Trevor Story is hit at every single level he's been at. It might have taken him a little bit of time to acclimate to Double A. But in 2015, and 300 at-bats at Double A, he eventually hit 155 in his second go-around. Or sorry, a WRC plus of 155. His slash line was 281, 373, 523. And in Triple A, he didn't hit as well, but he was still better than the average minor league hitter. So now with Jose Reyes questionable, I think he's got a real shot to win the job. And it would be really exciting, like you said, to see something go right for the Rockies when so much has gone wrong.
And if he succeeds and plays well, it gives them a trade chip to potentially go out and get some starting pitching help, which they so desperately need, because they have Brendan Rodgers. So it allows them to kind of play the two off of each other and use them as trade chips.
Maybe. I don't think you can count. I mean, you know, seen it. I mean, every single year, a heralded first round pick flames out, never makes it. So that could happen to Brendan Rodgers. Obviously he's very highly valued, but I don't think you can use Trevor Story as a trade chip just yet. Obviously if that point happens and Brendan Rodgers is their shortstop of the future and they've already got a second baseman who Trevor Story is not better than, I think you can consider that. But for now, at least to me, it would be too early to give up on Story.
Well, Story playing well could in turn allow them to trade Rodgers if they wanted to and cash in on his high stock. It gives them options. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'll go with it. Definitely gives them options. I think they're going to let Rodgers. I don't think if Rodgers is really nailing the ball down in the minor leagues, I don't think they'll find a way for him to play, much in the way that the Giants are going to find a way for Christian Arroyo to play, even though he's an infielder. He will, they're not going to give up on him if he's hitting the way he's been hitting. They'll find a way for him to work into the outfield.
It's always back to the Giants, huh?
It's the team I know most about. So if I can,
that's fair enough.
If I can come up with a comparison, it's going to be that.
My guy plays the same position as Trevor Story and Brendan Rodgers and everybody. My guy is a Philadelphia Philly, and he's a well-known prospect. He's one of their top 10 prospects, and that would be J.P. Crawford. And some of you may say, well, Chris, he is a well-known guy. We were looking for maybe a not-so-well-known guy. But the reason that I picked J.P. Crawford is I think he's going to force his way into the Phillies' plans this year. You look at their depth charts, and I'm pulling them up right here. Freddy Galvis is their starting shortstop. And Freddy Galvis is a very decent major league player. And he is a very good replacement for Jimmy Rollins, who the Phillies lost. So, you know, they've sort of shifted out of that Jimmy Rollins era, and Freddy Galvis was the guy who took over. He played last year, and he will play this year. But J.P. Crawford is a potential difference maker. And when the Phillies talked about their future, his name came up with Malik Franco.
Mikel.
You know, if you look at Mikel Franco, excuse me, pitchers like Aaron Nola, Jack Eichhoff, all those guys that, you know, the Philadelphia Phillies have been stocking up and waiting for to unleash on us all, J.P. Crawford is one of them. And just for example, let's take a look at what he did last year. At age 20, last year he played for two levels. He played at high A ball, and then he got moved up to double A ball. He played most of his games at double A ball, where he had a slash line of 265, 354, 407, drove in 34 RBIs with 5 home runs. So not a powerful hitter, not a Troy Tulowitzki type player, but a guy that is going to get on base. He stole a couple bases. The most steals he had was when he was 19. He stole 24 bases. So not a huge threat on the base path, but a guy that's going to hit consistently. He hit better in the lower levels, closer to, you know, 300. He hit 345 with the rookie team, with the rookie league team. So he's probably not going to start the year with the Phillies. He'll probably start in Triple A. Is that fair, Matt?
Yeah, I think, I mean, maybe Double A just to get him some reps, but 405 plate appearances in Double A is more than enough to determine if he's ready for the next level, and he is.
Yeah, so he is Double A or Triple A, and if he does start at Double A, it won't last long. Maybe a month there, and he'll be up with Triple A. So And if he hits well at AAA, you know, there does come into play the Super 2 stuff and the, you know, extra year of control and all that stuff that, you know, comes into calling up a prospect nowadays. But this is a guy that the Phillies may get up to the big leagues to get their fans excited about what the future looks like. So even as a Met fan, I'm excited to watch J.P. Crawford play because as much as I didn't like them, I liked watching Jimmy Rollins play. And I think J.P. Crawford is going to be the future star shortstop for the Philadelphia Phillies. So I'm excited to watch him play.
Yeah, definitely. He's one of the most exciting guys in the minors. And he doesn't have the power that you like to see or that a lot of fans like to see. But I think one of the most exciting things about him is his walk and strikeout rates. He doesn't strike out a lot. He did for five games with the Desert Dogs in 2014 in a rehab assignment. But ignoring that, his walk rates and strikeout rates are almost identical. And in fact, over the last 2 years, he's walked more than he struck out. In 2015 in high A, he had a walk percentage of 14.7 and only struck out 9.5% of the times or the time. And then in 2015, his walk percentage was 12.1 and his walk and his strikeout percentage was 11.1. And it's been that way throughout most of his minor league career. And it's really rare to see a guy who's that young in the minor leagues have such an advanced understanding of the strike zone. So when he comes up, you know, he might have an adjustment period, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, he's not going to be that guy who comes up and just has no idea what's going on. And he gets overwhelmed by the pace of the game. You always hear rookies talk about how much faster the game is. And when you get to the big leagues and you kind of have to slow things down. And not to bring it back to another Giants guy, but Joe Panik was very similar in the minor leagues. He didn't wow you with power. He was never a crazily rated minor league player, but his walk and strikeout rates were always really, really encouraging despite his other struggles. So that's always great to see it. And JP Crawford already has that.
Yeah. And he's going to give them lineup flexibility. They could really slot him anywhere, top of the lineup, back of the lineup. And he should be a key cog for them going forward. Matt, anything we missed before I wrap up the show?
I think that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. I know sometimes we have outstanding stories that we didn't get to, so I just wanted to check. All right. Well, guys, thanks for joining us this week. And this is where I remind you once again that iTunes is the best place to get the show. You go there, you hit the subscribe button, you get the shows automatically downloaded into your iTunes podcast section. And while you're there, leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing, if you guys are enjoying the show, and what you guys want to see us talk about. If there's, you know, something you want us to talk about every week, let us know and we will see if we can fit it into our busy block of talking that we have here. And if you know, don't like iTunes and don't subscribe there, there are other ways to listen to the show. You can listen to it through our Blog Talk Radio page. And if you do listen to it there, make sure to give us a follow there too. Same sort of thing. You can get the shows automatically in a little queue for you. If you listen to the shows via our website, which is MLBDailyDish.com, they are at the bottom of every article. There's a player that has not only this week's episode, but all of the episodes that we've done in a convenient little place for you to listen all at once. So yeah, make sure you do all of that so you have the show whenever you want it in your pocket on your phone or at work if you're listening to us on the web. Make sure you have all that done so you can listen to us whenever you please. So yeah, that's going to do it for us this week. We should be back next week, although I don't want to guarantee anything, but there may be a mini episode coming out either this week or next week as Mike and I get together live in Arizona for spring training. I don't know what we'll talk about, but it'll be interesting because Mike's been touring spring training, so maybe I'll ask him his thoughts about all that. Matt, thanks for joining me this week.
Well, thank you for having me.
I should have kicked you off the show when you didn't have a new nickname, but whatever.
I'll come back stronger next week, I promise.
All right. It better not be The Bull 2 next week. Don't be a sequel. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Thanks for listening, guys, and we will see you next time.